Jack David is the co-publisher of ECW Press, a Toronto-based company that publishes fiction and non-fiction. Well known as the most significant publisher of books by and about wrestling, ECW releases 60 new titles per year and has won various awards, including the GG for fiction and poetry, not yet non-fiction. Jack, welcome to the Bibliophile again.
Thanks, Nigel.
Ken White worked for more than 30 years in the magazine and newspaper publishing industry as editor of the Saturday Night Magazine, founding editor of the National Post, editor-in-chief and publisher of Maclean's Magazine, president of Rogers Publishing Company. He is the author of award-winning biographies of William Randolph Hearst and Herbert Hoover. His most recent, vigorous, and provocative book is called The Sack of Detroit, General Motors and the End of the American Enterprise. He's the editor and publisher of Sutherland House Books. He doesn't have any hobbies unless hoarding books can be considered a hobby. And even then, he's trying to get over it. Welcome, Ken, again to the Bibliophile.
Happy to be here.
Okay, now we're in a very small domestic market in Canada. And so I am going to position this conversation as Canada's lesson for the publishing world, okay? So first of all, can we agree with the first Canadian Governor General, Vincent Massey, I'm just going to quote him here, that reading is a good thing? Now, he addressed the 125th anniversary dinner of the Ryerson Press in October of 1954. With your indulgence, I'll just go through this. It won't take too long. I am not come to offer an apology for books and reading. I shall attempt an apologia, a reasoned defense, unnecessary, even ridiculous in this company, but I believe not inappropriate on this public occasion when we are gathered to honor those who make books their calling. I shall not dwell on what we all know, that books are obviously still the standard means for the recording and communication of facts in ample, precise, and coherent form. In our age, marked by a progressive revelation of new and significant knowledge, there is a constant demand for information which cannot be met by a series of radio talks, however good. On the contrary, as we all know, the usual response to a satisfying series of addresses on the air is the demand that they be printed. As a means of serious communication, there may be supplements too, but there is no substitute for the clear, adequate, permanent, and portable book. Would you care to add to that?
Go ahead, Jack. Thanks, Nigel. That's a great intro to get the conversation going. So Massey is talking about the fact that books are important.
Exactly. I just want to establish that point with you guys.
Yeah, I heartily agree that books are important. Have they been taken over as a means of communication or entertainment by other media? Yes, they have. So okay. Why are people watching TV and movies and listening to podcasts and doing whatever else they're doing as opposed to reading books?
Right.
It's a good question. But during the pandemic, since we're here in 2021, what we found is that people have reverted to books because they can't go out. And if they can't see live entertainment, they can't see live recording, whatever, they read books.
Okay.
And book sales, according to Publishers Weekly and the last edition, the most recent one, book sales were up 18% overall in the pandemic year. So in some ways, Massey is right. But what's going to happen in 8 months or so? That's the question.
Okay. Can we agree that reading Canadian books is a good thing?
Well, on his first point about reading books, I agree. They're important. I don't think they're as important as they were in Massey's time. I think there's other ways to access information now. He was talking specifically about the physical object, which is no longer a necessity. We have ebooks, we have audiobooks and so on. And we have the internet, which is an enormous source of information that wasn't available back when he has, but there is still a need for books. There are still some things that books can do that really no other medium can do. So, yeah, I agree with him on that. As far as Canadian books, of course, I don't think there's any more need for Canadian books than any other national books. I'm always a little bit suspicious of any national literary projects. I understand the politics, and books and authors are a good way to bring you into that. So, yeah, sure, we need Canadian books.
Okay, now, you, in your newsletter, your publishing newsletter, recently wrote that with regard to books, Ottawa and the provinces have been trying to build a Made in Canada publishing sector for 50 years, and that they have failed as completely as it is possible to fail. Now, I just spent the last month driving back and forth across the country visiting bookstores, and there are an incredible number of Canadian books that have been written about Canada. Incredible variety, and I think quite a number that are really good quality. So how's that a failure?
Well, you don't have to agree with me, Nigel. My point is that with the amount of enthusiasm that Canadian writers and editors and readers have had for Canadian literature, you know, so both the supply and demand of literature and the efforts of publishers over the years, you know, I think that they presented a great opportunity, and the federal and provincial governments have been trying to shepherd or oversee or direct the course of this literature for 50 years, and they've managed to drive it to 4% of the market. And to me, you know, I was overstating it. They could have got 2% of the market, so it's not as big a failure as it could have been. They did get 4%, but to me, that's a pretty big failure, especially given what they set out to do, which was have 50% of the Canadian market over a period of time taken by Canadian independent publishers. That just hasn't happened. The part of the market owned by Canadian independent publishers is small and shrinking. We've lost most of the big independent publishers that we have. Jack would know better than I, but you know, there were 4 or 5 good size independents, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and they're gone now. We still have some reasonably good sized independents in places like an ANSI and Jack's ECW.
Biblioasis, good. Yeah. Sutherland House, I've heard, it's pretty good.
Very, very, very small relative to those ones that I mentioned before, and certainly relative to the multinational branch plants that are operating in Canada and that have a huge hold on our market, foreign-owned, foreign-operated publishing houses are the dominant force in Canadian publishing. So to me, it's a failure.
It seems to me that, you know, we've got a couple hundred, 200 or 300 independent publishers in Canada, and they're producing two to 3,000 books a year. That's compared to, and I'm pulling out the Massey Commission here, in 1948 Canadian books, there were 14 fiction books, there were 35 poetry and drama, and 6 quote general. That's an improvement.
Well, it's an improvement, but nobody reads it. I mean, you know, as I mentioned in the piece, you look for a work of adult fiction or nonfiction in the top 300 best-selling books in Canada, and there's one, Tanya Talaga's book. That's it in the top 300 bestsellers in Canada. Yeah. Yes, there are, you know, 2,000-3,000 books produced every year by independent publishing houses, but altogether they amount to 4% of the Canadian market. That's pathetic. Most of those books are doing nothing but generating landfill. So, you know, there's some really good books in there and really worthy books. And it's nothing against the attempts of the authors or the attempts of the publisher. But the fact is, they are not meeting the market. And the project of producing a homegrown, independently owned, Canadian-owned publishing sector is nowhere near anything that could be called a measure of success.
Let me jump in because I would slightly disagree with my esteemed colleague from the Sutherland House. If you take a look at individual provinces, individual cities, regions, you'll see that the expansion of the number of books has reached into St. John's and Halifax and BC, especially. I can name you publishers in Alberta, Manitoba, in all kinds of genres, from fiction to poetry to kids' books to educational books to reference books. They may not be bought in great numbers, but if you're a resident of British Columbia, you now have the ability, if you want, to find a book about hikes into the Kootenays or a big fire that's taking place in Kamloops. You find books that are about individual BC pioneers. You find books that deal with the BC government, the provincial government, books that deal with the mayor of Vancouver. So on an example of what's happening, if there was not support, my position is that most of those books would not be published and the public would be badly treated by not having those books. The fact that they don't sell 50,000 copies or 5,000 copies or 1,000 copies, I don't think matters if the book is worthy and it's going to be around for a while.
But without government funding, we wouldn't have those books.
But without government funding, we wouldn't have roads. We wouldn't have hospitals. We wouldn't have a lot of stuff. The point is that the government funding is there to support Indigenous, what I would call Indigenous Canadian publishing by Canadian publishers, Canadian authors. Otherwise, we can't deal with the Daniel Steeles of the world.
Okay, I'm going to come in with one more sleep-inducing quote about this, and it's from one of the great Canadian publisher editors, Lorne Pierce, who ran the Ryerson Press for many years. Here's what he said. One does not apologize for being oneself and standing in one's own shoes. What has value for us, what reveals special insights, records unique ways of life, will have value and interest for other people and enlarge their horizons. Whatever is vital will live, at least for a time. What is not usable dies and is plowed under. One may have many international interests, one may even be regarded as cosmopolitan, but fundamentally, that is down deep at the foundation of things, one is always a native son, a birthright child of time and place, and that is the secret and the strength of our infinite variety and endless interest as a Canadian people. Can you comment on that, Ken?
I kind of tuned out halfway through. I think he's saying that there's a case for local literature. Is that what he's saying? Local national literature?
Well, I think what he's suggesting, for example, is that Canadians not just try and come up with Schitt's Creek, but come up with something that's actually Canadian, as opposed to trying to appeal to an international audience.
Yeah, by the way, I thought Schitt's Creek was a pretty good show.
I didn't say it was shitty.
And I have no problem with people producing books for local audiences. I have no problem with people producing books that don't sell. I agree with everything Jack said about local literature and some of the, you know, good quality stuff that's available to people in different regions of the country. My point is that the provincial and the federal programs were designed to produce a made-in-Canada, Canadian-owned publishing industry. And there were all kinds of policies that were supposedly going to keep the multinationals from dominating our market, keep ownership of Canadian publishing houses in Canada, ensure that the dominant expressions of literature available in Canada were Canadian. That's what I'm talking about. That project, and that project is the project that's failed. It doesn't mean that individual writers and individual publishers, as I said at the outset, aren't doing worthwhile things. I'm talking about the aims of the policies that the government's put in place and how we assess their progress over the last half century. And notwithstanding everything that Jack said, I don't see how anyone can believe that those objectives have been met as far as, you know, producing a literature for Canada as opposed to one for the world. I don't really have strong feelings on that. I've spent a lot of my career writing for a Canadian audience. I've spent a lot of my career writing for a non-Canadian audience. I know a lot of people who do both. I read a lot of both. I think they're all worthwhile, but I do believe that the market is increasingly global. Canadians have shown by their purchasing habits, their reading habits, that they consider themselves citizens of the world and are just as likely to read about something happening in India as they are something happening in Canada. We're very cosmopolitan people. Why not embrace that over, you know, being parochial, narrow, nationalistic, provincial? I think you can make the argument both ways.
Do you want to respond to that, Jack? Or
it is true that the Canadian industry has not made headway into the marketplace as the government thought it might, and that the percentage of the overall sales is declining. It's also true that many Canadian publishers, especially on the kids' side, have been very successful at selling books into the world market. An example would be the Robert Munsch book that's always on the New York Times bestseller list. Other books that have achieved success in translation and in other countries. And the 4% number that Ken uses doesn't include what the export revenues are for various companies, because it's only Canadian sales that are accounted for in the stats from Heritage. In our case, for example, we sell about 45% of our books into the U.S. And if you include that, then you see that we have a market share, but it's a market share that is including other things. And it doesn't show up in our ebook sales and our audiobook sales. It doesn't show up in our production sales. It doesn't show up in a lot of places. So I would put ECW Forward as a company that has in fact established more of an international scope, and add onto that kids publishers like Barca and like Groundwood and like Anik, who have made a real mark and whose sales are significantly higher outside of Canada than inside Canada. So has the policy been a failure? If it's based on market share and increasing market share, then yes, but we have to define market share. And the second thing is, has it been a failure in terms of putting seeds in the ground in places where there were no publishers, where authors had no local opportunities before? Then it's been a huge success.
I think that he's right. One of the unintended consequences of the program has been that a lot of publishers, including ECW, Sutherland House, are increasingly looking to global markets, looking beyond the Canadian markets in order to book sales that will, you know, float the enterprise because it's really hard to do it on a Canadian-only basis. That, you know, it is, I think, a good thing. It's, again, an unintended consequence, as it wasn't part of the original program. But it's slowly being recognized, I think, by the granting agencies as something important, because they are starting to encourage exports more now. I think, as I said in the same newsletter, I think that's something that Canada should do more of, is push Canadian literature out into the world. I'd like to see a lot of the great authors that we have be able to publish someday, first in Canada, and stay in Canada for their careers. You know, we've sent a lot of Canadians to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the best Canadian writers publish first in the U.S. Or even the U.K. rather than in Canada. I think if we had stronger firms with a bigger international market share, we'd be able to keep, you know, not all of them, not the Atwoods or the Gladwells, but we'd be able to keep more of our strongest writers within the country.
But that's an old story, and it goes back to the time when people like Richter found no publishing home in Canada, mm-hmm. went to England. And then when he finally came back in the mid-late 60s, the environment had opened up a bit, so he could find a local home. And a bunch of other writers who also came home, a lot who left and never came back, and a lot who left and came back eventually.
Yeah.
For me, that's an old story.
But all of those people, the Richlers, the Mavis Gallants, and so on, still publish primarily outside of the country. They did find a Canadian publisher, but it was their primary publisher was in New York.
It seems to me, Ken, that your point about the government failure is much as anything a foreign investment issue. They haven't and didn't enforce their foreign ownership regulations. And in fact, Penguin Random House, as outlined in Elaine Duer's book, The Handover, basically duped the Canadian government into believing or treating them as a domestic company, and as a result got millions, possibly tens of millions of dollars out of the Canadian government, which seems to me to be a kind of a story of the Canadian economy, of American companies coming in, pretending to be Canadian, and taking a ton of profits out of our country.
Yeah, there's a lot to that story, but there have been a number of attempts through the years to limit ownership of publishing in Canada to Canadian firms. It was supposed to be from the mid-80s onwards that if, you know, a foreign branch plant operating in Canada like Penguin or like Simon & Schuster, if Random House comes along and buys Penguin or buys Simon & Schuster, the Canadian operations of those firms are supposed to be offered to Canadian ownership first, but that has not happened, and I don't believe in the future will happen. That's not the way foreign investment is trending on a global basis, even post-Trump. So I think we've completely failed. You know, we not only have most of the Canadian market dominated by foreign publishers, but we've got most of the Canadian market dominated by what will soon be two firms, Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster on the one hand, and HarperCollins on the other. So we were supposed to have a competitive Canadian-owned industry, and instead we have a monopolistic internationally-owned industry, which is another, in my view, proof of the failure of the system over the last 50 years.
Isn't that the story of the Canadian economy, though? It's basically foreign companies coming in willing to make an investment, investing, taking a risk, and then basically getting all the profits. We get some jobs out of it. We get some, maybe some infrastructure. We get a decent standard of living. But the bulk of the profits, just like in the publishing sector here now, go out of the country.
It's a story of part of the Canadian economy, and you can look at different sectors and see a lot of U.S. ownership, especially in the retail sector, for instance, used to be dominated by the Bay and Eatons, and now it's all international chain stores and international department stores. So, yeah, that's gone the same way as publishing. But on the other hand, if you look at our broadcast sector...
Yeah, but that's because that's been legislated. That was legislated.
Yes. Well, so was the original foreign investment review policies, and the government also committed to what's known as the Baie-Comeau policy from the mid '80s, which is the one that said if a Simon & Schuster or Random House is changing hands, the Canadian operations need to be sold, and that hasn't been followed. Either it was a policy, it wasn't legislation, but it's the same principle. It was how the system was supposed to work, and it hasn't worked that way. So, we've managed to protect Canadian ownership in some, or not even protect, maintain,
yeah,
and in some cases protect Canadian ownership with some sectors. And we've been quite diligent about it, in banking and insurance and broadcast and so on. But we've really failed in publishing. My hope is that, Jack is soon big enough to buy up Penguin Random House and all these problems go away. But we're still, I think, a few years from that.
I think the other side of that is that since the Baie-Comeau policy has never been implemented, and there's a million examples of that, that at this point, if PRH comes along and says, I'd like to buy ECW, no one would stand in the way. And they would pay a substantial amount more than any Canadian company would. And the way companies have changed hands recently in the States, they're getting between 1 and 2 and 2.5 times revenue. So if someone came along and said, I'd like to buy ECW, whatever the granting situation is, we're going to pay you 2 times revenue, then that would be very tempting.
Do you think, Jack, that any, and I don't mean ECW in particular, you're right, we've seen a lot of consolidation. It seems like every 2 weeks there's another firm getting snapped up by one of the big guys around the world. I don't know that that's going to happen in Canada. I would like to see it happen. I would like to see an ECW or a Nancy, if the owners decided that they were at the end of their careers or at a place in their lives where they wanted an exit strategy. I'd love to see them be able to go out to Penguin Random House or Hachette and say, I'm available, and get 1.25 or 1.5 revenues. The big difference in Canada, though, is that those grants aren't available to multinational firms, and none of our major publishers, I think, are independent publishers, are close to profitable without grants. So I don't think the same sort of valuation applies to Canadian firms. And to me, that's another way that the whole system has failed.
That's true, Ken, except that the books that are not profitable would be dropped immediately by the acquiring company. And those are the books that attract a lot of the grant support. So if you called our list of 60 books and you said, we're only going to keep the wrestling books and the music books and the pop culture books, you would see a pretty profitable company.
I'm not saying there isn't something to buy, Jack. I just don't think it's 1.5 revenue or 1.25 revenue or anything. It would be kind of deal.
It wouldn't be times entire revenue. It would be times whatever, 0.8 or something.
Yes. Yeah.
But it would still be a shitload of money compared to whatever we would get elsewhere from anybody else. Nobody in Canada is about to buy us and consolidate us.
Yes. Agreed. your exit strategies then are within Canada, nothing, and outside of Canada at a discount for all of the books that you publish on behalf of Canadian literature.
Yeah, and the other exit strategy is to continue doing what you're doing and gradually reduce the number of books that you're publishing and let the backlist provide you with that retirement income.
And still take the grants as much as you can.
Yep.
Agreed.
I think what we're talking about here, too, is kind of a microcosm of the Canadian experience over the decades. What's the Canadian dream? It's to grow a company to a point where you can sell it to the highest bidder, and that highest bidder happens typically to be American or a foreign company. Whereas in the publishing sector, because it's just not attractive to foreigners, that hasn't happened. It's just because the companies aren't really worth buying. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think there's definitely some companies worth buying, but the economics are really, you know, twisted. We're really the only country that does this amount of granting and this amount of force feeding of our publishing companies. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. So, you know, I do agree some good's come out of it. My point again is that overall the system has failed its objectives. But, you know, going back to the sale of a company, the economics are all twisted because of the grants. You basically have otherwise, you know, you take the grants away and you have an insolvent company. And it's hard to sell to anybody on those terms, and the grants aren't transferable.
Yeah.
So if, you know, even an independent rather than, say, Grey Wolf, a great independent publisher out of
Minneapolis,
Minnesota, for a profit publisher, but do really good work, looks at Jack's lists and think, Christ, there's a really good way for us to get into the Canadian market. Let's buy ECW. They could do it, but then they wouldn't be eligible for the million or so in grants that Jack gets annually from provincial and federal governments. And as a result, you know, they'd be buying something that for their purposes would be in the red, seriously. So it's, again, one of the real problems of the system as we've set it up is that it's produced a lot of publishing companies. They're all mostly small. Nobody has much scale. Nobody has much capital. And those who do want to grow, those that do want to look at acquiring competitors or joining forces with competitors, have a really hard time doing so because of the nature of the granting business.
Yeah.
Without derailing your conversation direction here, I think the question becomes, so what's next? So what do we do? Are we looking for an increase in market share by Canadian-owned companies? Are we looking for more access to selling the company, better method of selling the company? Are we looking to enforcement of the big home policy? Are we looking to some kind of consolidation within the industry? Is that going to help?
I agree. I think that's exactly the question, and I want to know what Jack's answer is.
Well, and we've thought about consolidation within the industry, but if ECW is consolidating, say, with an ANSI in whatever way, there's no improvement. Mm-hmm. We have the same distribution system. We have the same sales force. We have the same discounts with Indigo chapters. We have the same people that we deal with on foreign sales. So it's just increasing revenue. It's not increasing profitability. It's not increasing efficiency. So what else happens? Well, it would be us buying an educational company, although education's gone down the shitter, so it's not going to be that. It would be us looking at buying a Quebec-based French language publisher. But we don't know anything about that stuff. We wouldn't put our nose in there for sure. So the only opportunity for us is to find someone who is a complement to our list, and that would be a genre publisher, let's say there were a great science fiction publisher in Canada, then that would be entertaining to us. Or a kids publisher, or some other aspect like that. But in general, no, there's no advantage to consolidation, and not on the grant side, and even harm you on a grant side.
Does that screw up the next series of articles you're going to write, Ken?
No, I agree with Jack. I think there is a little more advantage in consolidation if it's smartly done than he suggests. And you know, he's just consolidated a children's publisher, so I know he agrees with me at least that far. And like I said, if you know, like he said, if there were genre publishers available, maybe Harlequin comes up for sale again, Jack could buy that, and that would be a nice bolt-on. So, you know, I think there are ways to expand if you do it carefully and you know why you're doing it, and it's additive rather than just giving you you know, more exposure to what you're already doing. I think that's kind of limited in a limited route in the Canadian marketplace. So generally I agree with Jack. I think that if you want to get a publisher with scale based in Canada, the way to do it is to encourage Canadian publishers to be more active and effective internationally. I think, you know, right now, if, you know, Jack does wrestling books, if he finds that one of the best wrestling author in the world happens to live in, say, Pittsburgh, and wants to do a book with ECW because ECW's the best place to publish these kinds of book, it's hard for Jack to do it because Jack can't get access to all the granting support that he would if the same author happened to live in Nova Scotia. So that, you know, if you're looking at an industrial strategy for publishing and helping these small houses become bigger and stronger and better capitalized and more employ more people and produce more expertise in Canada and really grow the sector, I think figuring out a way to really support our industries in entering our publishing industry and entering the global market makes a lot of sense.
Except that virtually all our wrestling authors are American. We have the only Canadians we have are the people who dealt with Andre the Giant because they were Quebec based. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is American, and we treat those books as if we were based in Tonawanda as opposed to Toronto. We have to make money on those books purely on sales basis. There's no grant support at all.
That's what Ken said, though.
Got grant support, you'd be able to make a lot more money on those books, and you'd have more capital, which is what you complain about not having enough of.
Yep.
Well, it's like the development of the Canadian CDC. It's like if the government can help you compete to provide advances, not just to Canadian authors, but to authors around the world, would that be helpful?
I think so, yeah. Now, Jack also has stories, though, about what happened to Sheila Copps when she tried that.
Okay, just to play devil's advocate here, I'm a pretty happy consumer as far as being able to read about my own country. There's some great university press publishers in Canada. I'm thinking of the U of T and McGill Queens primarily. A couple of the best books I've read in the last year have been published by these houses. So I'm pretty well served. And Canadian authors who are popular are also well served by the giants, I think.
Well, it's fine, Nigel. If you're happy, then let's not worry about the fact that, you know, Canadian publishers only have 4% of the market. That's the important thing, that you're happy.
Well, that was me playing devil's advocate there. But I am not, I'm never happy with all of these profits that are getting sucked out of our country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law was friends with a guy years and years ago who had the first Sony distribution business in Canada. And they had transistor radios and he was selling them by the carload. And then one day somebody woke up in Japan and said, "We're doing a lot of business in Canada and this guy is slicing off all the profits. So we're just going to take over and set up our own operation."
Right.
That's partly the Canadian story as well. And once you establish the beachhead, the dominant company, the ownership company comes in, takes over.
Canadian publishers used to be agents, didn't they? For the other for the world publishers around the world. Yeah. So what is the solution again? To basically stopping all this profit going out of our country?
I missed that part of the conversation, the solution part.
That's why you guys were invited.
I talk about this all the time. I keep proposing things and Jack keeps shooting them down. And given that he's more experienced than I am, I've been forced to conclude that there is no obvious solution. But again, I lean towards embracing. First of all, if there are some publishers that just want to remain small and publish what they consider to be art and not to be bothered by market considerations and to receive government funding, that's fine. Let them do so.
Right.
But I think the one thing that really hasn't been attempted in Canadian publishing since all of these programs started is a dedicated attempt to put Canadian publishing on a commercial footing.
Right.
And that means getting their balance sheets in shape that they are sellable enterprises. And so consolidation can have a better chance of allowing them to and encouraging them to compete in a global content market, because we're not going back to national markets in content. Things, especially in the age of Amazon, are increasingly global. And that's only going to be more the case in the future. It doesn't mean we can't still do local books. We still will do local books. But the big opportunities and what our most ambitious authors and publishers will be looking towards will be those international ones. That, to me, is the direction to go. I'm not sure that anyone in Canadian publishing, aside from me, thinks so.
There were discussions before the collapse of general distribution that certain companies would get together, and the matchup was going to be Key Porter plus Douglas and McIntyre and maybe Stoddard into one group. It would then have perhaps $25 or $30 million in sales, the majority of that, most of that being in Canada. And one of the problems in making that work was that the publishers of Key Porter and Douglas and McIntyre couldn't decide who was going to be the chief operator.
Ah, yes. There we go. Ego.
Because you've been running, you started your company and you're running your company.
Yeah.
And now you've got to share it with somebody else. And publishers in general don't tend to operate that way.
Yeah.
I disagree with that, Jack. I think it's true. I'm not denying the specifics of the example that you chose. But that was at a time when everybody was pretty much in mid-career. And they don't stay there forever. And the reason Penguin Random House has got to be Penguin Random House with its, 300 and some imprints is because it's snapped up all of these available publishers. So, timing is important. Not everything's for sale at once, but things do come up. And as you said earlier, I think the smart route to consolidation isn't necessarily putting together four firms that all essentially do the same thing, but putting together the children's publisher and the book publisher and the genre publisher and the general publisher into a well-rounded organization, and then you start to get to a place where you can dream about consistent, repeatable sales and market share, and then more acquisition or more access to capital, more ability to expand, especially if you can look at it on a global basis. You know, ECW's next move could be buying Grey Wolf rather than the other way around.
Okay, so just to wind up here, Canadian indies should continue to be farm teams for Penguin Random House or this new Canadian conglomerate, that the government is going to help with some kind of funding to market themselves internationally? That the solution?
No, that's not what I said, no.
I thought that's what you said.
A farm team suggests that you're going to go from Junior A to the NHL.
No, it doesn't. They're staying as farm teams. They pick the good players, and then the big boys see who's good and run with them.
It's not that common that it happens. Everybody thinks that's the way it works.
Okay.
But the big guys are always on the lookout for that new author as much as the independents are. And the only value that somebody has in Saskatchewan is that they're closer to the ground.
Right.
And somebody is coming along. But think of how many Saskatchewan writers have been plucked out of Saskatchewan by PRH, HarperCollins, or Simon-Schuster. Not many.
Right. It's a publisher that was plucked out of Saskatchewan, though, that I know.
I think I have to say this. I agree with Ken on this point. That the people who are doing literary, especially, and political books and social, whatever kind of books, and have small markets, and they're doing it because they have a passion for it and they believe in what they're publishing, fine. God go with you and let the government support you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I that's what I'm saying, is we keep that going. But if you want to create jobs and some bigger Canadian publishing firms, isn't that what you're saying, Ken, that there should be some amalgamation? And then we have a couple of big Canadian publishing firms?
I think there's a number of measures that need to be taken to put the larger, more ambitious, commercially ambitious Canadian publishers on a stronger footing. And that is, you know, it comes in the nature of the grants. They would receive something that's more transactional and less juried. Because the juried grants, especially at the Canada Council, tend to go to uncommercial books, and that slows down a lot of large publishers. And I think as well, allowing them and encouraging them to embrace an international market and international writers, so that they're not so limited to Canada and the Canadian market would be helpful as well. So, I think there's a number of things we can do on that front to help those publishers who want to be commercially significant become commercially significant.
Yeah.
Even, you know, getting someday as big as Jack's Place.
But how many are there, Ken?
I don't know really how many there are. I can think of about a half a dozen off the top of my head. I think if the rules were set up different, you'd get more.
Maybe.
Okay, so we need a separate commercial strategy and a cultural strategy. Separate them and better define them, is that it?
Yeah, we're kind of sucking and blowing at the same time with our policy right now. We're saying, you know, be small literary publishers and care only about the literary component, the cultural component. At the same time, we're saying, you know, here's things to do to be more commercial. I think some division between those mandates from the granting point of view would help. I also think there's inherent in the granting system a bias against commercial publishers. They think that the only good literary work comes out of these small, devoted literary publishers. But I think Penguin Random House and others have shown, you know, the two best literary houses in the world at the moment are probably Knopf and FSG, and they're both part of big conglomerates. So you can do good literary work from within a commercially ambitious firm, and they're not mutually exclusive things. So yeah, I think we need to create some division in the way we approach these things so that people who want to do small literary presses can do them. People who want to have more commercially significant presses employ more people and have a bigger footprint in the market can be encouraged differently.
Okay, very final question for this round anyway. I interviewed Marion Sinclair from Scotland, and she was pretty well drooling over how fecund our government funding was. Yeah, she thought it was wonderful. So I guess our publishing sector should be grateful for one thing. So as I say, she sees it as a bit of a model. Is there anything from your experience that you can offer all of our publishing executives from around the world who are listening to us?
I think the grants are good. I think the issue becomes ultimately who is selecting which titles from which authors, and that the whole basis of our operation is publishing good books that are sellable. And if you don't have somebody or some people who can make that kind of selection, then you're going to go out of business pretty quickly, no matter what you do, grants or no grants. So what we have to do is we have to train people to be good acquisition editors. That's a key factor. And then you acquire, and then people look at you and say, I think I would like you to acquire for my company. The rest will follow.
I agree with Jack on that. I agree with Jack on everything. And I want to state as well that Jack is the example from which all of my ideas stem. I mean, he is the one who has tried to step out of the Canadian market and go deeper into the U.S. And he does get 40% of his sales down there.
Yeah.
And he is commercially ambitious and sells, publishes books that are meant to find an audience and do find audiences. And he has shown a willingness to grow and consolidate with his acquisition of a major children's publisher. So, you know, I think all of my ideas are kind of redundant to Jack's career. And I just need to give him credit for all of that. As far as the, you know, international people drooling over the subsidies in Canada, I think it looks good on the surface to, you know, have these monies coming in, but, you know, just being exempted in the UK from sales tax, value added tax, is worth a ton to that market. And I think if you would put something like that, if you added up the total amount of money on grants and put it against what the industry would save not having to pay HST on books in Canada, it might be a wash. Yeah. I think, you know, those are the kinds of things that we should really, if as we think about the future of the industry, you know, give some serious consideration to what's going on in other countries. We are an outlier. Do we really want to stay an outlier? Is there not better ways we can do things? As I said, 50 years and we're down to 4% of the market, so maybe we ought to consider some other options.
Ken talked about Grey Wolf, and I was at a seminar years ago where there were some American publishers, including Grey Wolf and Copper Canyon, some other American small literary presses, and they asked us what kind of granting programs we had, and we told them, and they were agog. And we said, well, what do you do? And they said, well, we're nonprofits. And when we took a look at their numbers, they got more money from foundations than we did from the government.
Yeah, Grey Wolf and Coffee House and those Minnesota ones get all kinds of breaks and supports.
Mm-hmm. If you compare how a company, how a literary press or a small press is able to manage, you have to actually go and take a look at the financial statements and see where their income is coming from. So I agree with Ken as usual.
So both of you guys really agree with each other, and
we disagree with you though, Nick.
And well, I was going to say and revere each other too, obviously. But what I want to do is to say, first of all, that Jack has put in a heroic amount of time developing and helping small literary presses in Canada. He's also done a hell of a lot of work in that field. So he's not just a wrestling guy. And also, so thank you for that, Jack. And Ken, thank you for your considered, intelligent, humorous newsletter. I really enjoy reading it, and thank you for making that contribution. And thank you both for joining me.
Well, we don't want you to get a swelled head, Nigel, but Jack and I were talking the other day, and we both agreed that what you're doing is an incredible service to Canadian letters, and that of everything that's going on here, at the end of the day, you're going to have an archive that's probably worth more than anything we do in all of these recordings that you're doing with people around the world in the publishing industry. So thanks very much for having us on. It's been a pleasure.
Jack David is the, what are you, Jack?
King of publishing.
And Ken, what are you?
I'm just, you know.
You're the Dauphin?
Jack's footstep, central conscious.
Very good. Thanks both again. Great pleasure.